Okay, everybody. Looks like we're ready to get started. Good evening and welcome to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Harmony and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Harmony.
For those of us who care to join us, let us open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. This is the preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step we discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step two, and then I turn the meeting over to you.
Okay.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm Judy, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Judy.
Good evening, everybody. So we're gonna start on page 45, 44 if you're in a third edition. And it's the chapter to the agnostics. In the preceding chapters, you've learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. To one who feels he's an atheist or an agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face, but it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were of exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics, but after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else. Perhaps it's going to be that way with you. But cheer up, something like half of us thought we were atheists or agnostics. Our experience shows you need not be disconcerted. I'm just going to stop there and talk a little bit. So, am I an alcoholic? I came here not really looking for an answer to alcoholism. I came here looking for an answer to the terror I was facing on a daily basis. I mean, I didn't really want to stop drinking, but I was absolutely terrified of what was going to happen the next time. And I it was recommended to me by somebody that I drank with that I come here. So I, that got my attention, that somebody I drank with thought I belonged here. So, you know, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably alcoholic. That's a great definition of alcoholism, because that is what happened to me. I honestly, at times, wanted to stop drinking and made a valiant attempt at it. I did a lot of stopping and starting, but I could never stay stopped. That was always the thing. I always knew I was going to go back. I always had high hopes. You know, in Bill's story, he talks about the goose hung high, and, you know, it was all great for a few days, and that was me. I could do it for a few weeks. I controlled my drinking while I was pregnant. I had a lot of evidence that could easily be twisted into a belief, which I did, believing that I'm not really, I don't really have a problem. You know, I can manage it if I want to. So I tried a lot of desperate attempts to do that. And in the final, when I stood at the final spot and knew I absolutely had no control over the amount of alcohol I was going to drink, at some point it was going to take complete charge of me. I just couldn't deny that any longer. That was a fact of my life I couldn't escape, I couldn't twist, and couldn't debate any more. So how does that, and that has to happen in order for me to be here. If that has not happened to me, and until that happened to me, I couldn't be here and stay here. And nobody could give that to me. There were plenty of evidence that should have convinced me that this was not the path for me, but I couldn't believe I wouldn't believe the evidence. The evidence didn't suit me. That's the thing. You know, I was about arranging my life, and this didn't fit the not drinking thing. So then it says, so if this is the case, which it's the case in my case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Well, this was just deadly news for me, because I thought, a spiritual experience? What? I believed in God already. You know, when I came here, I'm like, oh, so that's the answer? How can that be part of the answer or the answer? I already believe in God. What I didn't understand was to put some legs on faith has nothing to do with who you think God is or what you think you believe about God. It's about action. What will I do? This is my definition of spirituality. If I will do something that's not my idea, that's spiritual. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Will I surrender that much that I'll do something somebody else is suggesting? Under all conditions. When I really don't absolutely have any desire to do what they're suggesting, will I do it anyway? Will I overcome that? Will I say no to myself? That's the action of a spiritual principle. Because that's surrender. To do something outside of my comfort zone, my idea, is surrender, and that is a spiritual foundation. And it will work in all areas of my life, and does work in all areas of my life. So I guess the most important thing I can say is not to get tripped up by the words, atheist, am I atheist, am I agnostic, who cares? Do you have a faith that works? Does it work under all conditions? Does it have anything to do with your ability to drink or not drink? Is anything active in your life besides your own thinking? These are the things I had to come to surrender to this idea that an experience involving people, beyond, outside of myself, principles I had no desire to adhere to, was absolutely necessary for me to recover. And was I willing to pay the price? And the price is this. Am I willing to say no to me? Okay.
There you go. Harmony, alcoholic.
Hey, Harmony.
All I can really do is share with you my experience with coming to this step. And I was 17 when I first started coming around Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't stay sober. I was probably around AA for 9 months to a year where I did not stay sober, and I continued to drink even though I was going to AA meetings. And I came, I remember being in treatment, and all of my counselors and the people in AA that were around me, they were like, "You're gonna die. You're one of the worst alcoholics we've ever seen. You know, like, I don't care if you're 17. You're so self-willed." And I was very defiant. I was very mouthy. I was also very emotional. Like my emotions were up and down. Like I sober. Anytime I didn't have alcohol in my system, I was like rageful, angry, or hysterically crying at any given point. I hysterically crying over things that are inconsequential, basically. And all of that kind of stuff is listed in this chapter called The Bedevilments. And I suffered from all of those things. And they're like, you're not gonna make it. If you don't get this, you're not gonna make it. And I'm like, yeah. Like, I still had a job. I was still looking at scholarships. I was convinced if these few things worked out for me that everything would be okay, and I decided to move to California with $500, and which isn't enough to pay 1 month's rent in California, if you don't know. But I ended up I got a job as a nanny in the Hollywood Hills, and I quickly lost that job because I mouthed off to my boss, and then I was homeless. And I was still going to AA meetings at that time, and I basically picked up a guy in AA, and I lived with him. And we had no furniture. We were three newcomers, basically three people that weren't sober, and we all lived in this house. And I used a beach towel as a blanket, and I had no a way to wash my clothes, and I wasn't drinking at that time. And I remember feeling so dark and desperate at that moment. Like, the guy that I was living with was talking to his wife on the phone. And I remember laying there with my towel and thinking, I my life is just gonna keep going on like this. It's just gonna keep being like this over and over and over again, because without the drink, like, this is where I am. Even without the drink, like, I'm not drinking right now. And look at this misery. And something clicked inside my head. I didn't know it at the time, but I reached a new level of desperation. I started going to, I went to an AA meeting that week. And when the people talked to me, they were telling me to do the same things that people had told me in meetings before, but at this time, I had a different level of desperation. I was like, yes, I'll do whatever. They said, here's your sponsor. And I called her. And they said, someone's going to pick you up at this house you have with no furniture and take you to the meeting the next night. And I said, yes. And so what Judy was talking about, that, like, I came to the point where I knew that that the drink was only minutes away, that it, like, if it kept going on like this, like, it was going to come. And I knew I couldn't stop the ball from rolling. And I desperately wanted it to. I wanted the drinking. I didn't want to necessarily stop drinking my whole life, but I wanted all the consequences to stop. And a lot of the stuff that I heard was very overwhelming to me. And it talks about this in this sentence: to be doomed an alcoholic death or to live a spiritual life are not always easy alternatives to face. Now, if you tell a cancer patient you're going to die if you don't take this chemo, most of them, I mean, it's human nature to question. I'm sorry, it is. Like, even normal people do that. But an alcoholic will go, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to take the chemo. That seems kind of, like, hard. And and then the next thing it says, it's not so difficult. And if you're new here tonight, that's the main thing I want to tell you, is it is not difficult. Like, you know, like I have come across hard things in my sobriety, and I've come across things that I've had to change that are really, really hard. But to make a start in it, all you've got to do is start, you know, like, and what's so hard about it is, like what Judy said, listening to somebody else's advice. Like, my head was so loud that nobody else's words could get in there for a long time, you know? And when I finally started taking action on the things that other people told me, then it was like this wave, this avalanche of good things and spirituality, and everything just started pouring in, like, through very minimal effort of my own, you know, like, and I firmly believe that God's grace came in there and just, like, and it will for anybody, and just, you know, like, just take you on a ride through this program.
Okay, so our experience shows that you need not be disconcerted. We go on to say, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. We could wish to be moral. We could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Lack of power, that was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. The problem. And the problem is me. Boy, I really had a great run at everything that we're reading here tonight. You know, I had I'm gonna clean, you know, I was the worst of the worst, and then I was the best of the best, and no matter where I was in the pile, I still wasn't right. I still didn't want to be in my own skin. So and I had this, like, double thing going on all the time. You know, I had this image of who I wanted you to think I was, and then I had the real me that was between my ears. And the conflict, oh my God, the conflict between those two things was, I couldn't live with it. You know, you can't live with that conflict and not be drunk. There's only one solution for that, a gun or drinking. And the gun's just quicker. And you might not do it right. So then you got to deal with all that. I mean, that's the kind of thinking I had. I was like, I'd rather drink myself to death, because if I screw up the gun thing, that's going to be a mess. And who wants to clean that up, you know? So I thought, this is the easier, softer way is to just drink myself to death. And, you know, that's insanity. Talk about insanity. That's crazy business. If you go, tell somebody that, and I wouldn't advise it, you know, they're going to get you some help that you don't really want. And that kind of help involves locked doors where there's no handle where you are. Okay? So, you know, you get to make your choices. And I was on the brink of that a couple of times. So, you know, I did all this. I tried to turn myself into somebody, a good person. You know, I tried to be good. I couldn't be good. That was the other conflict. Why can't I be good? You know, why can't I not drink? And then the book goes on, and the great thing about our book is this. Whatever problem you have, they always lay the problem out. Then they tell you what the nature of the problem is, and then they tell you what to do about it. It's the simplest book I've ever read. But I got to tell you, the first time I read it, I was baffled. I couldn't follow it. I really didn't understand it. I knew what it said. I could tell you what the words meant, and I could follow the sentence structure. But what does this really mean? So being a person that, as I've just described to you, that I am, then the book says to me, here's your problem. You don't have any power to do this. And I said, well, wow, that's right. I don't. I can't make this happen. I can't stop drinking. I can't stop thinking about drinking. And when I am drinking, I can't get over drinking quick enough to make my to keep the facade going. And that's really what was coming apart. I couldn't make all that stuff, the timing, work anymore. And somebody was going to find me out. And now I had also under my care a baby, which totally freaked me out. And, you know, this doesn't happen to everybody, but for some reason, it made a difference to me. For some reason, it mattered. It was the first time in my life anything mattered. And I never really, I'm still, you know, I still jumble about what mattered. Was it that I really was concerned about her, or was it that I was afraid if something happened to her, I was going to be locked up in the penitentiary for the rest of my life? I'm still not really, I go back and forth on that. But I think, you know, the bottom line is I was more self-concerned than I was other concerned. It just happened to be the thing that tripped my level of comfort with my demise. So, a power greater. So this power, that's exactly what this book is about, its main object. It's a very important sentence. The main object of the book is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. And that is the main object of the book, to help you find a power that will solve your problem. And your problem, if you're like me and you meet the description that is printed in this book, is you. All the stuff I just said, that's my problem. So, this is not a book it's not a self-help book. You might find it on the self-help shelf in the bookstore or the library, but it is not a self-help book. And this is not group therapy, AA meetings. This is not a place that you come and just dump your conscience or your mind or whatever you happen to be in possession of on the group. We're here to meet, to find that power and to share our experience doing that. That's what an AA meeting is. And that's what this book was written for, and that's the purpose of the book.
I don't have a lot to add to that. I just, you know, like, I didn't come to AA going, I need a spiritual experience. Tell me, you know, like, tell me how to get in touch with God. Like, I came to, like, tell me how to get some money, how to get some job, like, get a boyfriend. And I was still looking at that stuff with the people that I talked to, you know, like I wanted to talk to the people that were lawyers and doctors and driving Mercedes and, you know, like and all the cute boys. That's what I cared about when I was at meetings. But what ended up happening was after being in AA for a while, I got educated about what I really had, and that there's a speaker in California that talks about, like, you'll catch alcoholism if you stick around AA long enough, and I hope you catch alcoholism. And I was like, oh boy, I've got alcoholism, which basically means, like, no matter what I do, I'm gonna drink again. And I have this horrible self-will that will just take me, you know, it'll take me to California and me lying on the floor, you know, feeling suicidal. That's where my will gets me. So when I started to learn these things, then I started to say, well, what's the answer then? You know, what's the answer? How do I stop all of this stuff from happening? And everyone in AA would say, God, you got to tap into this power that will stop all of the horrible stuff that keeps happening. And this power can help you not drink.
So my higher power when I came here was everything I could do. That was my higher power. Every idea I had, everything I could think up. I was like, you know, where's the bank account? Where's the right job? Where's the right husband? You know, where are the right friends? Isn't that what's going to make this right? And this whole idea that wasn't the answer was foreign to me, completely foreign to me, and very hard for me to swallow and wrap my mind around. I really just couldn't get it at all. So what they told me to do, because I couldn't get it, was they said, keep coming back and come as often as you can. And for me, that meant for the time of my life and the condition I arrived here in, that meant I came twice a day. I wanted to come twice a week, but it was twice a day for me. And then as I went twice a day, what I realized was that it was the only time that I had an eighth of an inch of peace. So it made me want to keep coming. And I thank God for that. Because if I didn't have that kind of desperation, and I didn't have that experience about being in AA and in AA meetings, I wouldn't have stayed. So, okay. So we are going to go to, much to our relief. All right, we're jumping over to page 46 in the third edition. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, in the right place. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took other simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men. So, the great thing about that paragraph is you can't argue with it. We don't insist that you believe anything. We're not telling you what to believe. All we're saying is, if you'll just accept that there is a power greater and that the solution is in being connected to that power, that's all you need to begin. And I have to say that this is 100% the truth in my experience, that at every turn with a sincere heart, when I have asked for help, I have always gotten help. Now, there's been times when I've asked for help and not really wanted help, or I've asked for help and been insincere in my request, or I've asked for help and I'm still doing the dance, you know. I'm giving you the impression I'm doing this or, you know, playing your game. And in here I'm going, yeah, but, oh yeah, oh, I'll just sneak down the street to the 7-Eleven. You know, I've got the double life still going on. So as long as I'm doing that, I can tell you, no, your prayer won't be answered. That's a guarantee. And it's also just as much of a guarantee that with a sincere heart on my knees, every time I've asked, I've gotten help immediately. Not next week, not the next day, immediately. And that's my experience, so, and I stand by it. Ma'am.
I didn't come in here with a lot of hang-ups about God. I really wanted to, I really felt like God loved and cared about me. I actually have a harder time closing my mind off to spiritual principles as at 15 years sober. This paragraph is much more relevant to me now than it was when I was brand new. But I want to tell you guys about I'm not religious, and I don't attend church at this time. I don't have any opinions about what it is that you need to do as far as your relationship with God. Not at all. But I want to tell you that whatever God is or whatever God could be, God can save you from your alcoholism like He saved me, and you can have this wonderful life. It does not matter what you have done. It doesn't matter how low you have gone and how ugly it has been. It doesn't matter. God will welcome you. He will give you just as many blessings as He has given to the saints, you know? And you can have all of the great things that come from staying sober a long time, or staying sober that any of one of us have done. It doesn't matter if you what you did while you were out there. It doesn't matter who you are. And I grew up in northern Minnesota, and I lived kind of a very sheltered life, you know, until some alcoholism brought some ugliness into my world. But I got sober in LA, and there were always homeless people walking in and out, there was hardly any black people, there was hardly any Asians, there was hardly any other color in Minnesota where I grew up. But in LA there was everything, and I remember shuddering at the thought of having a homeless person like breathe on me at an AA meeting. And I have seen low people with very, very rock bottoms. I have seen them get sober. I have seen them stop smoking crack. I have seen them, get higher education, or even just get jobs and and wash their car and shave their face and get married and have kids, and some of them were doing it right alongside me as I was getting sober. And so it doesn't matter if you're like me and 17 and relatively high bottom, didn't lose much supposedly, or if you're a if you're low, 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 or it doesn't, this is all inclusive, this is talking about. And spirituality is all inclusive. There are a few rules that I have to follow, and as long as I do those things, I get to have this awesome spiritual life.
So, yeah, they go over that quick, that sentence, provided we took other simple steps. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's the invitation to work in the steps. It's about three words, and you can just jump right over it if you want to, and I did a long time. But I do remember reading that at one point and saying, other simple steps, what do they mean? What are they talking about? But I had read the book a long time before I even questioned that. So I asked my sponsor, and she said, well, what does it say? Of course, they're so smart, sponsors. I said, well, it says, provided we took other simple steps. She said, well, what steps have you taken? And I said, well, I'm not drinking. She said, yeah. What else are you doing? And there began my inquiry. But I got to tell you, nobody that sponsored me in AA has ever said to me, you've got to do this now. You have to work this step now. And even when I've asked about steps, they say, when you're ready, you'll do it. Because there's no amount of making anybody here do anything. It's hard enough to make people who live outside of Alcoholics Anonymous do anything. But you people are especially obstinate. And I count myself among you. So I never, and as aggravating as it may and must have been for these people who were trying to help me, they never insisted upon anything. And that's the great beauty of this, because, if your life doesn't convince you need to do this, God help you is about all I can say to you. Your life has got to convince you that this is a requirement. If it doesn't, I don't know where to go from there. So some other things are required in addition to being willing to accept that there is a power greater, that you require that, that it is possible to be restored to sanity, that the life you're living today is an insane existence. All of those things have to be, we have to accept those terms, in other words. To accept this program and to work it and to have it have an impact in your life, you have to accept the terms of agreement. And you have to agree with everything that's outlined in the book. And I can't agree with some of it and say, you know, I don't agree with other parts of it. It's either all you're all in or you're all out. There's no half measures. Okay. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he's on his way. It's been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And this is not a one-time question, is there a power greater than myself? I have to ask myself that regularly. Because I get into situations where I find that I'm standing in the power seat, you know, and then I have to say, and who is the power today? You? We're in trouble. So it's an ongoing question I have to ask myself, because I have to continually every day commit to that idea that there is a power greater than myself, that I am not it, and that if I make an attempt to drive the bus, I always run the bus into the wall. I've just done it too many times, over and over and over again. And the most difficult thing to communicate to another alcoholic is this idea that you don't, you know, the best policy at the moment is to be still and not do anything. Don't take any action based on your thought. It's a really hard message to communicate, a very hard thing to do. And I, for years, have been talked to by a sponsor who said to me, here's the question, do you believe or are you willing to believe in a power greater than yourself? If you believe that there is a God and that he has power over your life, then you don't have to do anything. That was a very hard thing for me to swallow. But it's come to be the truth for me. You really don't. What happens is when I get into a position where I will do that, get still and surrender all the way, then God moves me into the place I'm supposed to be. The decisions are, they unfold. I don't have to go charge at something. I just have to do the work that's in front of me to do. I've always been asked, where are your feet? What are you supposed to be doing right now? And, you know, I'll just give you an example out of my current experience of this. Some of you who know me know I've been struggling with this job that I have. And I have, you know, it's a numbers game. Most jobs are. And so I have surrendered, I think, and done the work, and asked God to restore my passion and creativity for doing what I'm doing, because I had lost it, and I've worked pretty hard at doing just the work, not trying to create an outcome. And today we got word that at least up to this point in the month, we're number one in the company and number one in our region, which has never happened the entire time I've worked at this place. It's a huge benefit, and I really enjoyed it for about 5 minutes. And now I know the next thing is, now I've got to pay attention to today. What's the next thing I have to do? I can't go get all lost in my head about that. It's a great thing. And what all that is what my sponsor used to say to me. She said, that's just God saying to you, you're doing the right thing, now keep moving. And don't sit down and don't take great praise and accolades over what has been accomplished, because, frankly, You didn't do it. You surrendered. God unfolds the circumstances. But only if you surrender. And I have lots of proof of that. If I don't surrender, those circumstances stay as tight and jammed up as they can be. And I don't move. So, I kind of got off on that. Would you like to add to that or go on to the next paragraph? Okay. All right. So that's the demonstration in my experience of that question. Do I believe or am I willing to believe there's a power greater than myself? And it's the demonstration of the answer to the question is in the action that I take. Page 52. We had to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were a prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. Was not a basic solution of these bedevilments more important than whether we should see newsreels of lunar flight? Of course it was. And this is my favorite paragraph in the whole book. Because when I read this, this is me. This is my life on a piece of paper. And I was this person all the time, all rolled up together. Personal relationships in the toilet. My emotions are up and down and all over the place every day, all the time. I could never stay in any one place. Constantly fighting off misery and depression. I drank myself into my house. I couldn't work. Uselessness. I always felt like that. Full of fear, unhappy. I mean, God, kill me, you know? I just didn't want to live. Who wants to live like that? I didn't. All drinking did for me was delay the end, you know? I have to say I'm grateful, and I hate to say this because I hate this phrase, but I'm grateful for every drink I took because it really delayed until I could get to the place where I could get sober. I'm really grateful for the man that I married, even though it was a disaster, because he took care of me long enough for me to get sober. Because if I hadn't had somebody taking care of me, I don't know what would have happened to me. So I guess why this is so important to me is because I could not debate this. This was happening to me. This was real. This wasn't something I thought might be happening to me or happening to me on some day once in a while. This is my life in a paragraph. So I thought anybody who can put that in a paragraph and knows exactly what it's like to be an alcoholic and suffer from alcoholism, because that's the description of the suffering of it, must know something. I could concede that much. When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. And that's about all I knew about that. My ideas didn't work, and yours did.
This is the bedevilments that I was talking about earlier. What happens to me when I'm sober or in the cups of alcoholism is this stuff. But I mean, this is like, I don't have to be drinking to be in this at all. You know, like I had a period of sobriety. I tried to quit drinking for a big swim meet for my swim season, my senior year. And I got into fights with my parents and my brothers almost every single day. I ripped a banister off the wall. I punched my hand through a glass cabinet. I punched my mom. I got some type of assault charge from getting into a fist fight with a girl at school. And I literally held her over a bridge and I said, "Stop talking about me." Who knows if she was talking about me or not? I mean, really, like I haven't seen the girl since or whatever. I don't even remember her name, but like crazy stuff. I was panicked about the tests I was having to take at school. I was crying all the time. I remember looking at myself in the mirror and feeling like my eyes were black, Like, I mean, I was extremely self-obsessed. I mean, I don't know how long I stared at myself in the mirror, but I was like, I'm dead. I think I'm dead, you know? This was all sober. I hadn't drank in 3 months. I mean, like, I had smoked one really big doobie in that 3 months, but I didn't. I was 17 and I was looking at the rest of my life and I was like, if it's going to be like this, I'm going to just jump off of my house right now. Like this, I can't live like this. This is, life sucks. And alcohol was one of the only things that made it feel better. But then there was like such a crap load of consequences that came with that, you know? It wasn't so easy as like, okay, I'm just going to follow God now. My channel to God was clouded with a whole bunch of crap, a whole bunch of ideas that didn't work. And that's what it's talking about here, is that our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. But I wasn't able to hear God's ideas then. I'm still not. I need a sponsor. I have to have a sponsor to run my ideas by. And that was what was so painful about being new. Because I would call my sponsor and I'd say, I'm going to do this and this and this. And she'd say, no, you're not. I think my suggestion is that you do this and this and this. And my sponsor had a lot of suggestions. I had to call her at 7 o'clock in the morning. And if I didn't call her on time, she would hang up on me. And she would say, I'll see you tonight at the meeting, or I'd say, or call me on time tomorrow, click. And I'm not condoning that, but that's the kind of stuff that I did. She said I wasn't allowed to date for a year, and that one I fought tooth and nail. Like, I only made it maybe, like, I kissed a couple of guys in my first 90 days, and then after that, I was like, I made it to a year. All of these things that she was recommending to me, she wanted me to go to a meeting every night. She actually set up a job interview for me, and she said, "Go, you know, like, it was going to take 3 buses for me to get to this job interview. I was 30 days sober, and I really wanted to go to the mall with this guy from Australia." And to this day, I still have no idea why I went to the job interview. But I did, because I was convinced that on some level that if I didn't start doing something differently, and I knew these people had fixed their lives, so I was like, okay, like, maybe if I just do what they say, then I'll get a different result in my life. And that's exactly what happened. Like, and I can tell you that job was being a receptionist at a chiropractor's office. That job got me a job in an orthopedic office that got me a letter of recommendation to UCLA, a letter of recommendation to PA school, that got me the education that I have now, and that those jobs I can still put on my resume today. And it's all because I followed that one sponsor direction at 30 days sober. So God was like yelling at me, Harmony, go to the job interview, you know, but he was yelling at me through my sponsor. So I personally believe if your sponsor isn't pissing you off, they're not doing a good job in your first year. So
yeah, and you can't put on your resume you went to the mall with the Australian guy. It doesn't work. Okay. Anyway, I'm not going to go on about that. So, let's see. Where are we?
Right here.
40.
52.
Am I reading that?
I did that one.
I got confused.
It was this part we didn't.
Okay. When we saw others solve our problems. I didn't read that?
No.
I didn't? When we saw others solve their problems by a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, we had to stop doubting the power of God. Our ideas did not work, but the God idea did. I did read that.
Appendix 2, mm-hmm. where we are now, actually. Yes. Sorry.
Okay. So now we're going to read from the appendix, which describes a spiritual experience, which, depending on what book you're in, it's most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience, can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. So the appendix really describes, it kind of gives you an outline of a spiritual experience that's different, really, from the one that Bill Wilson had, where he had that immediate thing. And mine has been an education, a long education, grueling at times, coming to this idea of God consciousness, to be and really all that, in my experience, what that means is to be able to be present to the moment, fully present to where I am, and not wandering around in my past, wandering around in my future, and in the middle trying to come up with some scheme to make the past go away and make the future be better. You know, that's what God consciousness is. And it really does parallel with the idea of being of complete surrender, where I really just surrender myself and then let God unfold the circumstances instead of me directing the circumstances with my will. Capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience. This, to me, is a promise. You can recover if you're capable of that. In the light of our experience, and our experience is this, that we surrendered to the idea that we had to find a power greater than ourselves, and that that was the only solution. If you have another solution, the solution doesn't work. If there's another solution, this solution can only work in exclusive of anything else. I tried to use, you know, what I thought was God consciousness with reading interesting books about my psyche, and I tried a lot of different combinations of things that have nothing to do with what's written in this book, and I didn't have a spiritual experience. But when I sat on the phone with my sponsor at, you know, 25 years of sobriety and let her read the book to me and tell me what the book said, that's caused an experience in my life. That's absolutely changed me. And my pride and my ego would say, oh, what can she tell me about the book? I've been around here all this time. I know the book inside and out. But I wanted the help. I thought, I can't walk this walk by myself. I can't evaluate where I'm standing. I know that. I mean, I know that. So I did exactly what she said. This is what I do with people I sponsor. Are you willing to do it? I said, absolutely. And I did it. And I'm doing it. And continue to do it. And do it with the people that I'm sponsoring. So it's that kind of, that's being capable to honestly face myself and my problems in the light of the experience of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the light of her experience. Am I willing to face myself within the light of her experience? I said, yes. I know in my heart and in my mind, all the way down to my feet, that that's an absolute requirement for me. The minute that I think I'm not willing to open myself up to somebody else's experience who has agreed to help me, I know I'm in trouble. That's the turning point. That's when I've kicked God out. I'm now in the driver's seat and my will. It's my way or the highway. And this whole idea of, could I be wrong? Is there something wrong with this idea that I've had in my head for all this time? I didn't even know. I still don't know. I still have old ideas I'm not even aware of. And in this process of going through the steps with her and reading the book with her and working the steps in the process of doing that, very similar to what we're doing here, but also doing all the work that's behind it, I found old ideas I didn't know I had. So, hey, guess what? It doesn't matter how long you're here. You know, it's a spiritual journey. It's not a spiritual coming out party. You know, you don't get there and just show up this way and then stay there. It's an ongoing, life-changing process. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are essential at every turn. I don't care how much I think I know or how much I think I'm right. I have to be willing to say I might not be right. I might need to change direction.
My spiritual experience was also of the educational variety, and that's by following actions and direction that was contrary to what my head was telling me to do, and doing it for a long period of time, I started to look at the world differently, and I started to behave differently. First of all, I've been without a drink for 15 and a half years, and that I wasn't capable of doing that when I came to AA. I could not stay sober, could not take pills, I could not smoke pot and drink. I always wanted alcohol above everything else, and I couldn't imagine going through life without it. And I have been this long without it, and I haven't craved it. I haven't struggled with it. The problem is gone from my life. And on top of that, AA took me from being a taker to being a giver. And I didn't even know I wanted that when I came in here. I wanted the stuff, you know, like I wanted the, like, and I have the stuff. And that's a secondary benefit to living right. And what I could tell you is that about, you know, 70% of my energy is put towards other people. Maybe not what's going on in my head, you know, like, but what I'm physically doing and what I'm capable of doing is all directed towards other people, you know, and trying to see what I can do for them. And I did not live that way before I got sober. I would never even have wanted to, you know. I also have an ability to think before I act, and to not react to situations and not throw these time bombs into my relationships. And trust me, I've done it some in sobriety, and it's incredibly painful, don't get me wrong, but I have, like, AA has changed me to be able to like mature like anybody else would, you know, that isn't stuck in alcoholism. And also just being able to be useful to the world, that, like Judy was talking about, being present in the moment, like to literally say, okay, there's a person standing here in front of me who is hurting more than I am, and what can I do for them? And it's, God has been able to use me as a tool for 15 years to do whatever it is that he needs me to do. And I had to do the steps to get there, though. You know, like the steps and the stuff I was doing in AA brought me this spiritual experience I want to be in AA the rest of my life. You know, like I want to be here more than I want to be at home sometimes, to be honest with you. Like, there's a couple of things that you will never get it, ever get it. If you are not honest, if you are not willing to do what we tell you to do, you will never get it, ever. You'll be one of the ones that die. And I'm not saying that you have to be perfectly honest all the time or perfectly willing all the time, but you have to, you, like, it has to, it has to become a priority. And then open-mindedness, and that's what I'm talking about, being willing to listen to other ideas that aren't yours. And there has been times in my sobriety where I could not hear my sponsor. There have been times in sobriety where my friends, I was having tons of conflict with my friends. There were times where I moved to a different state and I had a total different network of sobriety. And there's one thing that kept me going to 15 and a half years of sobriety, and that is the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Through the steps, through willingness, honesty, open-mindedness, I was able to get to another sponsor that I could hear. I was able to get through terrible breakups in Alcoholics Anonymous, going to meetings right alongside him, you know? And the steps are what the program is. I needed to learn about them through my sponsor and all of that, and I'm still very, very dependent on sponsorship, but even when I was having conflict with my sponsor, I needed to get a new sponsor, the steps held me, like, and helped me to stay sober. So that's all I have to share.
Okay. And they're going to close with this paragraph. We are average Americans. All sections of this country and many of its occupations are represented, as well as many political, economic, social, and religious backgrounds. We're people who normally would not mix. But there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. We are like the passengers of a great liner the moment after rescue from shipwreck, when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage to captain's table. Unlike the feelings of the ship's passengers, however, our joy in escape from disaster does not subside as we go our individual ways. The feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement that binds us, but that in itself would never have held us together as we are now joined. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And that last two sentences is the whole thing wrapped up in a nutshell. We have a common solution. We agree on that solution, and we work together in harmonious action to help the still suffering alcoholic inside and outside of these rooms. Thank you for being here tonight. Harmony, you going to close that up?
Sure.
We're going to pass the seventh tradition basket.
The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to keep the alcoholic who still suffers, or to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites us all to all groups around the world. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
Hi, I'm John, not Ollie.
John.
I want to remind everybody that on Saturday, June 22nd, there will be the Gratitude and Action event, previously known as Saturday on the James. It will be at Ghent United Methodist Church, beginning at 9:30, going till 2. State delegate will kick off and give a report, and then we're going to have a lot of food, fellowship, and fun. There'll be some workshops. And also a speaker, so please put on your calendars, and if you need a ticket, you can see me afterwards. And tickets are $1 and also enters you in a raffle for the Oceanfront Conference, all expenses paid. Thanks.
Thanks, John.
Hi, my name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Kevin.
The District Archives Committee is making a history book for the Virginia area, and it's coming out in 2015, so... the committee is making a list of old-timers, and we're asking for, like, your stories so we can piece together everything. So if you want to talk to me afterwards, we can set you up with a oral history report. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Anybody else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Can the home group members please raise your hands? Yay. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? This isn't to embarrass you. We'd like to welcome you. Nope. There is literature available in the back. Please see any home group member after the meeting. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. These are the people to see if you need help. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at, are you Bella's again? Okay. At Bella's Pizza, which is over on Collie. And has, are you going to read it? Okay, sorry. And Judy has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on 164.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks.